Welcome to the Modern Girl Podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Parsons. I'm a certified holistic health coach, intuitive eating specialist, and health at every size advocate. Cozy up with me each week for empowering conversations with ambitious women as we share real stories around our relationships with food, body, and moving through life in the modern world. Hello. Good to be back with you. And I'm in such a good mood right now. I'm about to leave for vacation. So vacation mode. Where are you going on vacation this summer? I am dying to know what everybody has on their bucket list, what trips you have planned, what trips you're dreaming about planning. It's just such an exciting time after one hell of a year. Tomorrow morning, we are getting on a plane and meeting my sister and her husband in Wyoming. And we're road tripping all through Wyoming, exploring, never been there. We are just all seeing the sights together for the first time. And we're ending up in Utah. It's going to be about a week full of fun and hiking and good food and conversation and just lots and lots and lots of exploration and soul searching and just really, really grateful to be able to do this. So where are you going? Tell me all the things. Hit reply to one of my emails that I send out or shoot me a DM. I would love to know. And on that note, I am dying to share this conversation with you. I had a blast talking with my guest, Sabrina Chazen, and I know you're going to love her too. If you don't follow her on Instagram, please head there right now and give her a follow. She's incredible. She is just so real and authentic and fired up for the work that she does. And her story is super powerful too. I left this conversation feeling really heard and inspired and educated and just lit up to honestly lit up to just get to know her even more. Offline, she and I have created a really nice friendship since we've had this conversation, and she's just freaking awesome. I'm so excited for you to meet her. We are talking all about style in this episode, which it has a special place in my heart. You may or may not know, I got my start in fashion, and I've had a love-hate relationship with it. And I think there's a lot of things that need to change in fashion. And at the same time, I just feel like it's in my bones, this form of expression through what we wear and the creative element that goes with that. And so I had so much fun hearing Sabrina's perspective on this from a size inclusive point of view, which I am so passionate about bringing more conversations like this to our space. And I just think that there's a lot of things that need to change. And Sabrina is really leading the charge and championing this. Did I say that right? Championing. Is that even a word? Whatever. You get it. This movement in so many ways alongside so many other incredible human beings. We talk about advocacy for plus size fashion. We also get into the importance of confidence, as well as Sabrina's personal body image story, her entrepreneurial journey. We also talk about advice for cultivating your own style and finding clothes that allow you to feel confident, plus Sabrina's favorite plus size fashion brands and staples that you need in your closet right now. It's super robust. She's hilarious as well too. So we just had a really good time. Can't wait for you to meet her. Oh, let me tell you a little bit about her before we dive in. Sabrina, like I mentioned, she is a fashion inclusivity expert, showcasing that you can wear what you want well at any size. Body inclusivity and positivity doesn't mean that you think your body is perfect, but it is accepting your size every day and not letting it get in the way of you enjoying your life. Isn't this so perfectly timed for vacation mode? Hell yeah. Okay, let's get into it. If you can't tell, I'm really excited and I love you. You'll find everything in the show notes of this episode. Like I mentioned, please follow Sabrina if you haven't already. We've already planned some upcoming collaborations, she and I. So stay tuned for that. And without further ado, here is Sabrina Chazen. All right, Sabrina Chazen. Hi, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I am stoked to have this conversation with you and just have so many questions already. Let's just jump right in so we can make the best use of our time together. How's that sound?
Awesome. I'm ready.
Let's do it. So the first question that we ask everybody who comes on the show is your first body awareness moment. So can you just share what that moment looked like for yourself when you realized, hey, I'm in a body and this means something in the world that I'm living in? What did that look like? How did that impact your relationship with your body and or food?
I think mine might be later than most people, to be honest. I am. Or maybe I blocked it out, but I would probably say the most pivotal moment of me when I look back at body awareness would be when I was 9. Where I live in the summer, most people, or the lucky ones, do a program, a junior lifeguard program at the beach. And it was one of the more official first ones that's competitive. And I live in a beach town and I played water polo in college. So, you know, it was a big part of our lives. And you have to wear a uniform that back then, you know, 25 years, however many years ago, Quiksilver was making them for them and Roxy made them for them. And at 9, I already didn't fit in the girl's sizing. And I remember I was so lucky. The head of junior lifeguards was someone my mom knew and who also happened to be in a bigger body, not like me, but, you know, not the norm of an athletic. And she is athletic. Not a Pamela Anderson lifeguard. And she had me made a custom uniform. And I think in that moment, I thought it was special, thank goodness. And that may have shaped my whole, you know, what a blessing even talking about it. And I'm realizing that it probably shaped my vision that it was something special and different, not negative. But when I look at it as an adult, I realize how gnarly that could have been, that they didn't even have a uniform when I was at the youngest age that fit me, because I was already, you know, 5'8" and big and wide and athletic and different. And I definitely remember vividly being in the lifeguard try-on area that everyone was so excited and it didn't fit me and there was no choice.
Mm. Yeah. And that's such an impressionable age too, where it, I mean, 9 years old, I remember being 9 and thinking like, am I in this world? Am I not in this world? You're kind of like living in this pseudo fantasy land where things don't feel so tangible yet. And then there are those really pivotal moments like the ones that you're sharing that shape your reality and kind of bring you into a very present moment. And I can just feel that from your personal story.
I think it's when you see like all the other little girls are so, I think it was the first time I realized that they all are one way and I am a different way. And this is going to, you know, the trajectory of that, thank gosh, I don't think it was ever negative for me until actually adulthood. I was lucky as an adolescent. I was 6 foot by the time I was in, you know, fourth or fifth grade, but I don't think that it was a negative and that I really realized until I was older, because I was lucky in the sense I had older siblings that were quote unquote popular and cool. And so people were nice. I don't remember it being a bullying type thing when I was little, but in retrospect, I definitely am like, okay, this started young. I was different then. And now when I'm thinking about it, I'm like, whoa, they don't have a uniform that fits a 9-year-old. How horrible is that? But then I thought, oh, cool, I get something custom.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge problem there systemically that is, I mean, that's crazy that they don't have a size for you and that there is a custom bathing suit that has to be made. So that alone is problematic. How you handled it, though, that's an amazing mindset to have. And I'm curious, what was your relationship like up until adulthood? Like you said, didn't really seem to be a tumultuous relationship from what you're expressing, but how did you view your body? Was it more neutral? Was it celebrated? Was it accepted? Like, what would you describe it as?
I would say that maybe it's my own mental, like, mind magic tricks that I think of it as positive. But, you know, when I really, like, when you're asking and I start to think, like, did I have body problems? Did it come up? Was it really just I'm different? And then I think about it, and there's a lot of horrible things, you know. In high school, and my water polo coach told me to lose weight or that I wouldn't play. I think my parents did a good job, because I do have a sister 6.5 years older who's the opposite of me, who always struggled because she, you know, an eating disorder on the other end of the spectrum. She was underweight and obsessive. And in that way, I think my parents dealt with that when she was young. And so with me, they just didn't, they did the opposite. My grandma always says that my mom has two daughters who, you know, one didn't eat anything and one ate everything, and both are maybe problematic. So I don't know. I socially, it was never a problem for me, luckily, but obviously I'm talking about it and it's a mental thing now. And, you know, it shaped my relationship with fashion, and I guess in the end it does control my life, because here we are and I spend every day trying to find plus size clothes for people. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think I have that classic story of being bullied for being overweight or any of those things, but it doesn't take away the fact that it is playing a role in my everyday life, and that obviously it's an issue, or it's a thing, or it, you know.
Sure. What was your relationship like with your sister? I think that's really interesting that you're mentioning. Did she struggle with a diagnosed eating disorder, or was it just severe?
Honestly, like, I don't know that it's my story to tell, especially if this is, and I don't know what she would say about her relationship to food. She's looked great as an adult, and I think she's probably healthy, and I was so much younger that I never really knew what was going on there. But yeah, I think it's no secret that she definitely has a relationship to food, as we all do, and our relationship is not perfect. It's probably far from it. And I think she's always, I mean, this is my own perspective and my own interpretation of her judgment of me, but I think she has always struggled with the fact that I accept my body, and that she, I don't know that she always did. And I think that's hard for people who long for, you know, whatever the perfect body is, to understand how someone like me, who is in a bigger body, is okay with that, you know. And I am okay with it. Sometimes in the actual recent past, I've, you know, because of COVID and obesity being this hot button where you're going to die if you're fat, I have started to struggle more with my body, but that didn't happen until recently. I've always just felt that I'm athletic and I'm bigger and I'm happy and I find great clothes for myself at my size. And I haven't really had that problem until it started to scare me in my actual medical, you know, adulthood. And as I've gotten older and things become more serious, and I've had freakouts about, oh, am I going to be diabetic? And am I going to be this? And so in the recent past, it's been more of a thing, but the rest of my 35 years, it's always just been who I am. And I'm proud of that. And it is what it is. And it hasn't upset me. And I think that is hard for people to grasp. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I would agree. I mean, I think that body acceptance is challenging for most people in this culture, regardless of what size you are, and particularly stigmatizing sizes. But just like you're sharing about your sister, that the trigger of not being able to accept your body, even in a smaller size, and looking at you as somebody in a larger body who is fully accepting of your size and public about that as well too. I think there's a lot to that. So what do you attribute that to? What do you think were some of the key components in your childhood and just adolescence that really cultivated this deep body acceptance that seems really intuitive for you that I'm picking up on?
I think it's who you are. I think experiences change people, and I'm learning that more and more. And I think I was lucky in that I just have always been steadfast in who I am and proud of that and fine with that. And luckily, I think I had friends that accepted that, and they were the friends that I wanted. So I was never striving for another friend group until maybe now, but before, you know, high school, I was happy, you know, and I think sports and belonging to a team and feeling proud of that. And I do think my mom, even though I think we all, you know, sometimes I joke that we have a vain family, like, you know, my brother still has a 6-pack at 38 and loves to be tan and all the things. And my sister is what we've already discussed. And my grandfather who passed away, you know, until the very end, if we were at his club, would be like, do I look okay? And he would comb his hair and, you know, he's 90 something years old and can barely walk, but it still mattered. And so even though I come from all of that, my mom was always also so supportive and accepting of me and, you know, went the extra mile to find the right clothes that I wanted that would fit me and never made it a thing. And she, so I just think it never was a thing for me either. And I, despite my size, just thought I rocked. And I think that, I don't know how that, how you come to be. It's not, I wasn't journaling and self-care wasn't a thing. And I wasn't looking in the mirror and saying, you're beautiful. It just, I just, no, I just, I think that it was from within and I felt comfortable in that. And I was steadfast in who I was. And I was, I think everyone can have that. I don't think it's, but I, you know, I understand that sometimes experiences and negative life, you know, moments can take that away from you at a young age.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love what you're sharing about your mom too. It sounds like she just created this environment for you where, she was championing you at every stage of your life and really taking the emphasis off of body and instead emphasizing life experiences.
Yeah. And I think she also, you know, as much as she cares about how you look, it's not about your weight. It's about, you know, putting, she's still, it's so embarrassing. She's like, put a bow in your hair before you leave the house. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not a toddler anymore. Like, I'm not going to put a bow in my hair. Like, well, that helps you look put together. You know, like she just believes in presenting your best self. And whether that's 300 pounds or 100 pounds, you still just present your best self and that's good enough, you know? Paint your toenails and maybe put some lipstick on and all those things that even if they are vain or about looks, like they're not about your body. They're just about your presentation of that.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get into the work that you do now? You're a fashion inclusivity expert. And I mean, talking about your mom advocating, putting your best foot forward. And there seems to be some level of style and expression with that, perhaps in a different vein, but how did you get into this line of work?
I mean, I do. It's another thing I think is innate, like style is learned and practiced, but it's also innate. Like certain people have taste and a certain, you know, I've always said I'm drawn to people with taste and it doesn't have to be the same taste as my own. I just like it when someone has an eye and a passion for whatever it is that thrills them and that their taste is. It doesn't have to be the same aesthetic as mine. I love, I guess, looks and the way things, you know, appear. And I like that. And I know that can sound so curated and I guess vain might be the word of the day. We could drink on it. But it's not like that for me. It's not a vanity thing. It's a happiness and a, you know, I love, that's what traveling is. And that's what even food presentation is, but fashion in particular, I truly believe that you can look good and how you want to look at any size. And it is hard because of the way the fashion industry has been. It's evolving a little bit at a time to find the things that you might love and think look good at a bigger size, but it's possible. And I've always had a knack for that. Like I have the ability to walk into any store and be able to find something that will make me look the way I want to, even if they don't carry plus, even if it's an accessory, even if, you know, whatever it is, like I'm, that is a gift and I have it and I love it. And I'm trying to share that and help people find things that they love to make them feel confident and polished and walk out the door presenting their best self. So I,
that's a gift. No, it is a gift. And I am curious, when you realized that was a gift, did you, and I just from everything that you're describing, I'm like bobbing my head. I have the biggest smile because I so relate to so many things that you're sharing. And it is this energy that comes from style or presentation or travel, like you said, like it's just this very specific energy shift. And I get so excited by that. And like you and I were talking about before, I have a background in fashion, and I've also been, I was like basically born into a dress up box, right? And spent my life at thrift stores growing up and stuff. Right. So I love this just outlet and everything. But what was your experience like growing up? Was fashion something that you chose as a form of expression when you were in high school or college? Yes, or
always.
Yeah.
And I think like my closest friends in all phases of my life, you know, water polo friends, college friends, study abroad friends, anybody knows and like was drawn into that. That is my thrill. Like I would drag them to Nordstrom's Rack on the day new arrivals came. I went to school in Hawaii, so it was like very rare then. And now they have much more. But, you know, when I studied abroad in Prague, I remember I went to these weird but amazing, you know, not even estate sales. They were like so bizarre and like communist block buildings. And I would like go and find, you know, it's like the Carrie Bradshaw. If I lived in New York, I would go to every sample sale, even though I'm never going to be a sample size. Those are just things that I live for and thrive off of and give me life. So I think I've always loved that. And yeah, I think in high school too. And I love to shop. I really do. That's when I'm most myself probably. And I can do it in 2 minutes. I can do it for 4 hours. I'm fast, but I can do it for other people. I love shopping for other people. I thought that being a stylist would be terrific. It's not, you know, it's so hard in the sense of it's not about style. It's about the back end and the organization and the schlepping and the steaming and the business side of it. And I don't have that. I just want the creative outlet of it. Mm-hmm. But I do, you know, it's something that I thrive off of. And I don't think a lot of people do. I always thought like, oh, everyone can shop for themselves. And then I've learned that is not something everybody loves or finds. A lot of people are the opposite. You know, they find it upsetting and depressing and tiring and mundane, and that they just like to wear the same things because it's upsetting that shopping isn't, you know, the way a store people, you know, that's another example. People hate Home Goods or, you know, stores like that. And I'm like, oh, I love that. That throw me into there and I'll find you what you want. I want to pick through that stuff. I can find it fast and I see it on the rack out of the thousand things.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's just because it's so overwhelming for most people? Or do you think that there's a different reason why people shut down around shopping or just don't find the joy in it?
I think it's anything in life. There's a million reasons, body stuff. You know, it just like, you have a background in fashion. I don't even remember. There's different kinds of stores, right? Like they call those stores I just mentioned, like the Costco big box discount stores. Like that's for a certain type of person who likes that kind of thrill. Same thing with some people only shop sales. Some people want the couture experience to feel that way. I think that everybody has a different reason for being turned off of it, but I think a lot of people are turned off of it for whatever those reasons. Just like people don't want a bathing suit shop because, you know, their boobs are their postpartum boobs or their tummy or their thighs. And I'm the opposite. Like I want to be in a pool or beach because those are things that make me happy. So finding a bathing suit that I love makes me happy. And sure, it can be a little bit depressing here and there, but the end result and the thrill of the hunt and the win outweighs any of that for me.
Totally. I love that perspective. So did you go to school for fashion then, or is this something that just manifested into a career by way of your hobby and interest?
Yeah, I think it's just natural. And I went to school for political science. And you know, I always toyed after like, do I go to FITM? Do I go to New York and try and get into a program and learn sewing and pattern making and all those things? And, you know, that thought doesn't escape me still. I would like to have those skills because God willing, maybe one day a line will come. I don't know if that means with a bigger someone that already exists, or if that means with by myself or with investors, and you want that kind of knowledge base for sure. But I also think, like anything else entrepreneurial, like you can also learn that as you go. And I'm not taking away from an education. There's no, you know, exchange for that. It's valuable and needed, but I think I can gain the education as I go too, and use people who are educated already and hire them or bring them on board to teach me or to do that for me. So yeah, I have no history in any of that.
So how did you start your business then?
I mean, I don't know that it's a business. It's a, well, I mean, I guess it is. Anything that
I would call it a business. Absolutely.
It's monetizing, and I'd like to monetize it more. So a decade ago, or yeah, it's a solid 10 years now, 11. I have always known, like, plus size fashion is a niche that I'm good at and that I'm passionate about. And I started a plus size blog. We were living in LA and we had just gotten married. I was a child bride. The blog was so fun. It was called Sample Size 16. And it started doing well rather fast. It was on the brink of when bloggers weren't even, you know, there was no influencers. The blogging was the thing, and it was new and it was exciting. And most people had desk jobs still and were reading the blogs at their desk. And brands started giving me clothes and inviting me to events. And I had just gotten married. My husband was in law school. And I had a day job, and I don't know if it was late, if lazy is the word. Hey, lazy is a definite trigger word for plus size people. I don't want to say that it was laziness. I was doing all these other things. And my husband, quite frankly, did not want to be a photographer. It was not something that he enjoyed having to do. And I can get, you know, bossy, and I'm particular, and it would be a bickering point. And he was very supportive in the sense of just hire a photographer to take these pictures. Like, I want you to do this, but I don't want to do it for you. I support you. I will, you know, all the things, but I'm just not good at it. And it's not bringing us joy for him to be the photographer. So I think I just stopped because I was working and I had a lot going on. Then we had kids and I just thought, you know, this is frivolous. And sure, I'm getting a couple dresses here and there and going to an event, but what's the end result? I'll tell you the end result. All the girls doing it when I started have millions of followers and have brands and have, and you know, I think I held jealousy or resentment about that for a minute, but now I celebrate that. And back then I wanted to do what I'm doing now. I would always ask, you know, I asked a couple of friends who I thought had good taste and who would align. I would say, can you wear the same thing as me, or we'll find things in the same trend cast and put them on and show how you can wear them in your body and in my body. And originally the idea was that person would do the whole series. You know, it would be me, whoever, it could be you and I, and you would be wearing the same thing or something in the similar vein, take a shot. And we would show that we're both wearing this well and how to get this for each body type. Now, 12 years, 10 years later, it evolved into when I just woke up one day and decided I'm doing this. And it's been with different people every time. So therefore, I love it even more because now there's different bodies being shown. It's not just, you know, one person with me, the same person over and over again. It's somebody who has big boobs. It's somebody who doesn't have a big chest. It's somebody who's 5 foot. It's somebody who's 5'5". It's somebody who's, you know, all different things and all different bodies with mine. I've done a plus mat, you know, a couple that are two plus size girls because two big bodies are different too. And everybody watching wants to relate to see somebody wearing something in a body that looks like theirs so that they know what would look good on them, or that they know somebody who looks like them can wear that item well. So it's evolved into that, and I'm thrilled that it has.
Oh, so cool. So cool. And I have so many questions. So first of all, where do you get the clothes from?
It's constant. Some are gifted. Most I buy. A couple matches have bought themselves and, you know, been like, let me do this for you. I want to support you. Like, let's buy this dress. Most of them I buy. A lot have started to be gifted, and it's just constant sourcing anywhere. Mm-hmm. Truly anywhere. Like, and that's another hot topic is that a lot of people are like, I have a dear friend who works at a big publication, and she messaged me and she said, can we stop doing fast fashion? I love what you're doing, but can we do something that's not fast fashion? And I said, quite frankly, no, it doesn't exist. Plus size fashion doesn't exist in the contemporary couture ready to wear vein. It just doesn't. They're starting to a little bit. but it's not readily available in the same way that it is at Target, that it is at these places. Does it make me feel a little bit bad knowing that I'm out loud saying, you know, it's not the best practices and I'm not supporting the ideal sustainability, but at the end of the day, until I have a choice, the same as someone in a standard sized body, I'm just shamelessly going to buy it. And I am. So that's hard because I carry guilt in that, but I can't only buy Reformation, and they do make a small plus size run, and I applaud them, and there's a couple others, but it's not, you know, Zara doesn't even make plus yet. So until there's options, I'm going to shop where I can. And that's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite brands to shop? Like, what are the go-tos that you just always feel like you can find a piece that is elevated or just works well for you, or even both ways too, like the bodies that you're dressing as well as your own?
Mm-hmm. I would say that ASOS, A-S-O-S, they originally, I found them when I started the blog, have always carried a curve line that is on trend and moves as quickly as their other stuff. And they produce the most stuff for the curve line that matches the standard sizing. And that's rare. Also, Who What Wear, their Target line, the same thing. And what's most impressive or most positive to me about Who What Wear, what they're doing with Target, is that the clothes are on the same tab. So an example would be when I'm not asking someone to match and they come to me and they're like, Sabrina, I'd love to match with you. And I'm kind of like, well, find the outfit. Like, this is not, people think it's so simple. Like, okay. They're like, okay, I'll find an outfit. I thought this was your thing. And I'm like, I just want you to learn that you can't just go to mango.com or Gap, even the Gap, and think that you're going to find an outfit that matches mine. And then they'll send me something and I'm like, yeah, but the extra large is for a size 12, 14. And that's the biggest size they carry. And I am not a size 12, 14. So try again. And they go down this rabbit hole and they're like, wow, I didn't realize how hard it is. Or even like, you know, they'll find something and they're like, gosh, I know they make it in plus, but now I have to go searching for it. Where Who, What, Where, it's all on one tab. So they put the standard, petite, and plus in one, you know, they label it standard, petite, and plus, and you just simply click plus and see if your size is available. Where normally, even on ASOS, you have to go looking. It's in a corner. It's basically taking the department store model of plus sizes used to be near the homeware, and you had to go shamely, like with your chin down, go hide in the corner bottom basement of the store to find the plus size outfit. It's the same thing online, where it's not with the standard sizing. You still have to go to a separate plus size tab, type in what you want, find it there. Where the Who, What, Where, it's all on one page. You don't have to go searching a separate, and that change that used to be, that's a new evolution from like a year ago.
I love that. I actually didn't even know that. And I'm a big fan of Who, What, Where. I love their founders. I love the work that they're doing. So I lit up when you said that was one of your favorite brands as well too. Any other companies or brands that do have a same tab layout that you can think of, or is it just Who, What, Where that comes to mind?
Well, big ways, it would just be them. But there's other people. Well, that's not true. J. Crew, for example, they have started carrying a lot of things to a 22 and 24, and they're all on the same page. If the item is carried big, it's on the same page, but it's hard. You have to know to go into the search tab and type in like search by sizes, looking for a 3X, looking for a 22, 24, looking, and then it will narrow it down and show you. Otherwise, you're searching through the whole website, like blindly clicking an item you really love. And it's like, nope, only goes to a 12, try again. But when it does carry, it's on the same page. It's just not that everything doesn't go up, but the things that do, they're on the same page.
How can we change this from your point of view and your interest in advocacy in this type of work and just the business that you are creating, really promoting inclusive fashion? What is the best way that we can make changes to end the discrimination with sizing in companies?
Well, it starts from the top. I think it's shocking. A month ago, I would say now, I had an opportunity to do a match with a woman who's on one of the Housewives series for Bravo. And it fell in my lap. Another podcaster actually, who was really lovely and went out on a limb, texted me. And she's like, I'm having Bronwyn on my show on Monday. And she's super lovely, like open to things. I'm just going to say, like, can you match with Sabrina? Do you have anything to wear? This is on Saturday at like 6 p.m. And I'm like, well, I normally have things piled up, but I didn't have any matches on hand that would, you know, work. And I was like, no problem, I'll do it. Cause you know, I'm not going to pass that opportunity. And it's, you know, I'm a Bravaholic. It was funny and fun. Like that's something that I would love and that I want to do that for me.
Yeah, so, totally. That's super cool.
So I'm like, well, no problem. Like I don't live in a podunk. No offense if you do. You know, I don't live in the middle of nowhere. I can go to South Coast Plaza 10 minutes away. That's one of the biggest malls in the world, right? So I'm like, I'm just going to go to Nordstrom's, thinking like Nordstrom's feels inclusive. Like I'm not going to Neiman's where I know things are going to stop at a size 10. Like I'm going to Nordstrom's and I'm going to find something, no problem. And luckily in that moment, I was like, I'll spend whatever I have to. Like, I'm just going to go to South Coast Plaza and we'll be good. I'm like, yes, I can do this. I get to Nordstrom's. I've told you I have a good eye and an ease for finding things. I can find nothing. There is nothing on the floor that is in a size 2, 4, small, extra small, and my size. Nothing. Not one piece of clothing. Finally, like some of the shop help girls work. What I mean, whatever the PC word is, the retail lady.
Assistants.
Sure. Thank you. I sound like Ramona, which is so embarrassing.
You're fine.
One was so rude and was like, it's in the corner. Like, go look in the corner. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, you just put baby in the corner. And then I realized, how is this possible? They have Reformation. They have Waif, two brands that carry up to a 3X in a lot of items. Like these brands are doing great jobs at being inclusive. And you have sections on the floor dedicated to these brands, but you don't carry any of the big sizes, not one. I just thought, well, if Nordstrom's can't do it and these brands are producing the item, then who's going to do it? Because you're just proving I don't know what they're proving, because quite frankly, I really feel like there's so much money to be made. Like if this is about the dollar sign, then you're leaving money on the floor, because statistically, I mean, you're in this world more than me. I think there's more Americans over size 14 than anything else. Like the statistics are on their side, and someone like Nordstrom should know that and have the research and the analytics to prove that. So that was so disheartening. And then later I actually saw a video, I wish I could know who this girl was, on TikTok, a Black girl. And she said she has a fashion background, like super educated and in it. And she said she was working with a brand to extend their sizing and do inclusive fashion, and that it was more of a ready to wear good brand. And she didn't name the brand. And she said in the end, it all fell through because their customer didn't want to wear the same thing that a fat person did.
Wow.
So there you go. Like that was,
holy shit.
That was when I was like, oh, they don't want him. They're worried about losing their customer. So that's a whole thing that I had never even thought of. I really hadn't. I guess that's my childhood. Like, oh, it's something fun and custom. It's that like mentality where I thought it was amazing that you're going to make money, that this is, you know, who doesn't want more people wearing their things? And then I was like, oh, okay. I guess there's a whole dark corner that I missed. And that makes sense. I get it. I can see that.
Wow. Well, that gets my blood boiling.
Right. So
I'm speaking within privilege, that gets my blood boiling. I can't even imagine your reaction from something like that as well too. I mean, that's ludicrous.
I think it's like any other kind of fat phobia, you know. I think people experience it in a lot scarier way in the medical world, where it's the same thing, you know, in this, it's different, but it's that people think a thin body is better. And even, you know, doctors and nurses, a lot of them carry the same thing, you know, that immediately believe that your BMI is an index of health, and it's been proven recently that it's not. And even if it was, you still should not have, you know, I don't even know the words, but if we could all just be a little more empathetic, kind, understanding, supportive, inclusive, things would, you know, go a lot better for everybody. So I can see that she's right, even if it's shocking. I don't think she's wrong. I have friends that probably feel that way. You know, I don't know. It's pretty dark.
Yeah. I mean, I can see the connection there as well too. I'm just shocked. Just like you were saying, and it's pretty profound, like that statement alone. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to something that you said before, because I want to wrap up this part of your story and don't want to leave any question marks around your process before we like get on more soapboxes and raise our fists and all of these things. Yes, exactly. When you say that somebody is coming to you and they say, I'd love to match with you, for everybody who's listening and for myself included, what does that mean? What does that look like? What's the process? Why is somebody coming to you and saying that? What's the method that you're actually taking somebody with?
The series on my Instagram that I started doing that brought me back into this plus size fashion, even, you know, mentality or workspace, is I call it same style, different size. So it's been very organic, and it's been all people that I somewhat know in my orbit. Obviously Bronwyn is not someone I'm texting with, but she is friends of friends. We're members of the same club. And you know, so it's always been organic so far, until, you know, Beyonce wants to come, it's been organic. And
I'll just text her after we finish this episode.
Actually, group text her. Don't even ask first. And it's what I explained. So it's me matching with somebody in a different body, and we wear the same thing, and I post it, and I link to where you can buy it. And basically it's just the same style, different size series of doing a match, and we wear the same thing. And I think that's what people have loved most, is getting to see, especially the bigger bodied people, see things that look so cute on a standard size being worn and being found and being shoppable. I'm learning the influencer life very fast, that people get really upset when something's not shoppable, and it's such a hard hustle where, cause things sell out, and I'm not a big enough account yet where I'm not getting gifted the things before they're released. So by the time I've purchased it, shipped it, shopped it, stocked it, shot the match, a lot of times some sizes are gone. Things sell so fast, it's crazy. And that's frustrating to people, because finally they find something that they like that's in their size, and then it's sold out. And that bums me out, bums them out. But mm-hmm. I still think it's a positive thing to be doing. And, you know, one day I hope to get the things out there fast enough that they're not sold out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it sounds like there's more good than harm being done. I love this project. So I'm curious, if I were to reach out to you and say, hey, I want to match with you, would you create the outfit that we're going to match? Would you buy the pieces and shoot them? Is it like the same exact shirt that we would be wearing in different sizes and pants? Like, or is it just a version of it?
So it used to be a version. So far, the last 30 people or whatever it's been have been exact. And I would love to keep it exact, because I think it's even more empowering that you're wearing the exact same item as somebody else in such a different size and such a different body, and you both can buy the exact same item. Cool. I do love when someone wears it differently. So for example, if we're wearing a top and I'm wearing it with ripped jeans and you're wearing it with a silk skirt and I'm wearing it with a headband and you're wearing it with a blowout and I have a messy bun and I wear big gold hoops and you wear little diamond studs. I like when someone brings their own take to that, but I like it to be the exact item for sure.
Love that. Well, and that's just, it seems like it's tapping into your authenticity and your unique self-expression that you're emphasizing with that as well.
And that's what fashion is, right? Like, it's a form of self-expression. It's a form of your uniqueness. It's a form of presenting yourself how you want to be viewed. So I think you wear the match how you want, but let's match.
So how do you encourage somebody to find their own self-expression then? Especially, let's just say that somebody's listening to this conversation and feeling like, I am that person. I'm the one who's so overwhelmed, or I'm not comfortable with my body and I hate shopping, but I have this craving to find my self-expression. I don't even know where to begin though. What's the first step that you would encourage somebody to take in beginning to cultivate that for themselves?
They need to decide what's most important to them. So sometimes, and you should have both, I guess, the you want clothes that are flattering and that make you feel confident. And then I think it evolves into, I'm confident enough that sometimes I want to wear a piece that I think is so cool and says so much about me that I don't care if it's holding in my stomach or if my shoulders look more broad. But I think if you are someone who's not there yet and who's overwhelmed and who fashion kind of makes them nervous, you start with things that give you confidence based on, you know, what's important to you. And if what's important to you is looking tailored and flattering, and I think flattering is also a very controversial, triggering word, because are we all trying to look thinner? Is that what flattering means? Is that fair? Is that a body problem too? So that's complicated in its own right, but we live in 2021 and I don't believe in sugarcoating it. Yes, we do want that. So find what is important to you. If looking trendy is important to you, then, you know, then you shop at fast fashion things. If just finding basics that are more contemporary and that are more flattering is important to you, you got to build from that. So everyone needs to have certain staples. And then from there, you move on to what makes you feel confident. And I think you go off of that, what you're drawn to and what brings you the most comfort and confidence. And by comfort, I don't mean sweatpants. I mean comfort. And when you walk out your door, you think, I look good and I'm proud of who I am in this.
Cool. What are your favorite staples? And I know everybody's are going to be a little bit different, but if somebody's ears just perked up, what would you recommend are like the essential 5 or 10 pieces that everybody would benefit from having in their closet?
Well, everyone should have staples that are in different genres. So for me, like, you need athleisure and athletic wear staples. And I have a certain pair of pants that I love the most, you know, everyone, I'm still someone who, even though I love patterns and leopard and fun things, and I'm more bold, I still believe you need black workout pants, you know, with a pocket on the side that are the most comfortable and you can actually go on a walk in. And I think everybody needs the same for jeans. You know, everyone needs the pair of jeans that are evolving. They need to be elevated. Like, we, you know, I hate to bring up the Gen Z, Gen X argument, but skinny jeans are on their way out and I will always look better in skinny jeans. So that's a very complex argument for me because I struggle with, I want to keep up and I will always care about that. And, you know, I want to wear what's cool and in and fun and exciting, but I also do care that I look better in a skinny jean. So I'm going to start by opening the hem a little bit and still keeping, you know, with what's flattering, and that's where I'm comfortable. So you need a pair of jeans that is what makes you happy. And I think topper pieces are important. Like, you know, a couple of sweaters, blazer that are things that make you feel polished and finished and you can put over anything. So I love dresses, but you know, I can also throw a blazer over a dress. Everyone needs a good leather jacket. Everyone needs those things that they can always put on with other pieces in their wardrobe that elevates their outfit.
Cool. I love it. Where's your favorite place to buy jeans?
Old Navy. I mean, that's so, you know, I've been a fan of their Rockstar jean for a decade. And I think, you know, Madewell is starting to do a good jean for a bigger person. Levi's has a plus, and I love looking like I'm wearing the, you know, mom jean that has the buttons instead of a zipper and who have the old fashioned pockets on the back and the good wash. And I do wear those a lot, but if I'm going to pick my most flattering, favorite, comfortable pair, it's always a Rockstar from Old Navy.
I love it. So do you typically shop online or in stores when we're not living in a pandemic?
In-store does not exist, even for It's true. Even an Old Navy, even like I just explained, a Nordstrom's, the places where you would expect, right? Like, I'm not walking into a boutique that I know is ready to wear clothes. Like, I'm not, and I love those places, but I'm just saying, like, even the big places where you expect that, I don't know how to not typecast this, where it's more accessible to people that are in the strip malls in middle America, they don't even carry them, which is so shocking because, like I said, statistically, they should be. The money is on the table. And in-store shopping has not really existed for plus size until recently. Fabletics, I just learned, carries all of their all stuff in store and plus. Athleta started doing the same. You know, it used to be Lane Bryant. You used to have to go into your embarrassed little specialties plus size store. And they just, it's in store doesn't exist in the way it does for other people. I do think it's starting more and more, but it's always been like a dirty, dark alley. I remember my mom used to take me to this store called Mrs. and Plus Size in Santa Ana, like in the weirdest strip mall. And it had like trendy clothes that now are sold on Shein type thing from China. And she would let me get whatever I wanted. And they were like $20 each. And it had all like more cool things. I wish it still existed. I would get such a thrill of going in store and doing that. It's gone. But I would say 90% of things are online.
So crazy. And I chuckled when you said that because I thought that you were being like facetious. Like there's no, like, I prefer shopping online way more than in store.
Yeah. Right? I love being in store. It's just not
enough. You're being serious. And just after our conversation about Nordstrom as well too, that makes a lot of sense. And it's just, I mean, this is my own, this is my own learning moment in being an advocate for diverse bodies and inclusion and all of these things, because this is where my own privilege is really showing. Like I just chuckled because I've never had that experience before. And that, I mean, that's a problem. Like that is a problem in itself.
Yeah. But I feel for when I was in that Nordstrom's moment, I kept thinking, what would it feel like to be 16 right now, to be going to Nordstrom's to find, you know, something, a prom dress, and pandemic aside, or whatever, some important thing, and some woman says to you, it's in the corner, when you've asked specifically for help, and you go to the corner and there's nothing there for you, and you're thinking, well, what do I do? And how disheartening and upsetting. And if you don't have the confidence to, you know, like, I think a lot of young people wouldn't even have the guts to say, well, where do I find a size 20? Where do I, you know, that's embarrassing to say out loud to some people because of, you know, the narrative that society has built around it. And I think it's just demeaning, quite frankly, to be like, to go to the corner and to still not be able to find anything. And yeah, it's very real. It's, you know, I think
incredibly demeaning.
Even H&M has started in having a plus size line, and they have failed. So, you know, do I buy it if one in 50 pieces comes out and it's great? Of course, because I told you when it exists, I'm going to buy it. I don't have the upper hand here to be I'm a beggar, not a chooser right now. But basically their line is basics. It's cotton knit substitute teacher, retired teacher clothes, like what you would imagine your great grandma wears to the library in a small town and God knows where. And that's what it is. It's cardigans, which I love a good elevated cardigan, but this is an old fashioned shell with a little cardigan and khaki pants and cotton t-shirts and none of their terrific stuff that they produce in the other sizes. And once in a blue moon, something will pop through. Like they'll make 5 out of 100 when they release, you know, their new stuff. But the majority is like so embarrassing and so upsetting. And I understand that extending sizing is not as simple as we'll just do it. You know, these things cost money and patterns and production. And it's not, especially if it's something that's, you know, like a blazer or that's a tailored fitted item. It's not, you can't just extend the sizing because everything changes when you extend the sizing. Bodies and patterns change. And I understand that. But a lot of, you know, to these brands' benefit, a lot of the trendy things right now are like schmatas, are like big flowy dresses. You can extend a big flowy dress. You cut the, you know, you cut the neck and you cut the the armhole a little bigger and you're good to go. Like, there's a lot of ways that people could be doing better and they just don't. And it's pretty disheartening.
Do you think that it's more problematic or more helpful to have a plus size section versus just integrating the clothing all in the same area? I'm kind of conceptualizing this in my mind as like the tabs that we were talking about before, where you don't have to go to a separate tab on the web page for plus size. It just all exists in one page. In an actual store, do you think that the same thing is true, or is it more helpful or stigmatizing? What's your opinion?
I think traditionally it was helpful because only a handful of people made clothes in those sizes. So it was like, here, go here, and here's your five options. You know, Ralph Lauren, Eileen Fisher, those, you know, quote unquote old lady brands are in the corner for you. Now, with people, like I've said, like Waif and Reformation and more contemporary red, like younger brands are making the sizing, why does it need to be in a section? Why can't you just find what you want mixed in? Everybody should be doing that. And then it wouldn't even be a discussion. I understand the benefit of it being in a section. You know, everything fits you in this section. It's very easy. You can try anything on in this section. That's great. But in today's world, why can't everything fit you in every section? You know, why not? Like, it should all be the same. All bodies are good bodies. Everybody wants to buy something. Put it out. You know, somebody, this is horrible. Somebody in fashion said to me, well, I was talking to somebody at XYZ brand. It's a big brand. And they, because I was saying that so many, what I had just told you, so many things sell out so fast, especially in plus size. When people do collabs, for example, with Target, you know, these cool brands are doing collabs with Target, the big sizes sell out the fastest. And my argument was, there's a customer. And this person said back to me, well, I'm not saying anything about bodies. I'm just telling you, I was talking to somebody at XYZ and they said they only produce 2 extra larges, 3 double extra larges, so that when they sell out, they can say they did it, but it sold out. So you might think that it sells out fast, but maybe the number of the run was smaller. And I was like, oh my God, like this is so much to dissect.
That's crazy. And yes, to your point, I mean, it's just, it's layers on layers on layers of oppression and discrimination and just fat phobia and all of these things that are just important. Like, this conversation is so important because it's become so normalized that even for yourself, you said a couple of times, being in a larger body and having light bulb moments around what is actually going on. It's just, the system has created this entirely problematic way of pursuing fashion in an inclusive space. And I just really appreciate that you are on a mission to completely shift that in a really radical way. It's awesome.
I just think people deserve that and they want that. And aside from the emotional aspect, like I said, there's money to be made. Like, this is not just me saying, screaming inclusivity, even though that is the most important part. Like, if you're a business mind and you're producing, like, what are you doing? Why not be inclusive? It doesn't hurt you. It only helps you, is my opinion. And I believe that from all sides of the argument. You know, there is nothing to lose here.
Yeah. I fully agree with everything that you're saying there. Okay. I want to ask a couple of tangible questions, a couple more tangible questions before we wrap up, because I do want to just get into your expertise as much as possible. So for everybody who's listening, who wants to take more fashion risks, but are really triggered by this or scared, maybe it's because of the way they feel about their bodies, maybe it's just their personalities or their environment or whatnot. What's the safest or most supportive way that somebody can take a fashion risk?
I mean, it's mental. And I believe that it has to start from you. It's what I say about a bathing suit. You know, it's a funny tagline, but it's so much deeper and more real. I always say the only way to get a bikini body is to put a bikini on. So So if you want to start wearing different things and expanding your fashion horizons, you just have to make that decision and commit to that. So whatever it is that you love, whether it's wearing a felt hat or whether you, you know, put the hat on and, or whether it's color, people are afraid of color and you just have to decide, I love pink, I'm going to wear a pink sweater today. And then I guarantee you someone's going to compliment you. They notice. Like, it's just deciding that this is something that's important to you, deciding what you like and committing to that and trying. And it's like anything else, you know, it's like, I'm going to work out or I'm going to, you know, cook more food or it's any decision you make, you have to commit to. And I think taking a risk, even if it's not a risk to a lot of people, if it's a risk to yourself is a mental choice and committing to that. And it starts from whatever you like. And I mean that, like, if you know, people know what they like when they're shopping. And I believe that not everyone is as decisive as me, but you know, some people are drawn to floral dresses. It's what you watch on TV, what you listen to, all those things influence what you like. And when you know what you like, you have to commit and just decide, I want to wear a leather jacket. I want to wear a hat. I think that girl looks really cool in those jeans with boots. Whatever it is, it's just about committing and making a decision and following through.
Do you have a memory of a fashion risk that you've taken in your life that kind of like brings up butterflies when you think about it, whether it actually was successful or not?
So many. And like anything else, not all risks pay off, but you know, some people maybe it was an expression of personality. And because clothes didn't exist in my size, I remember a friend said to me, kind of in the last couple of years when I had kids, and she was like, oh, she's going to wear so much leopard and sparkle. And I was like cringing. Like, I would never put my child in leopard and sparkle, but I had a phase where I wore a lot of leopard and sparkle. And I think it was my way of expressing who I am, loud, boisterous, sparkly. And I thought leopard was, you know, I used to say leopard is a neutral. And I think that in that phase of my life, when things didn't exist for me that I could find that I loved, I wore that as an expression. And I cringed thinking like, oof, I don't think I would ever wear a leopard sequined purse today, but I understand why I did it. And I laugh thinking about it. And it was a risk that, you know, might've defined me to people, and that's funny and that's okay. And we evolve.
Oh, I love that. And I so appreciate that. I have quite a few fashion risks that I cringe over and laugh at, like, lovingly for myself at the same time. My pixie haircut when I was 20.
Your hair black, all the things, you know? But I think that's an expression of, and that's youth and that's growing. And that's anybody who looks at pictures of themselves from any phase of their life, you have to laugh a little, or, you know, like.
Totally.
I think if you think you peaked and you're looking back thinking, woof, I was doing my best choices then, that's what's more upsetting, right?
100%. I mean, I try to laugh at myself every day just because I don't think I'm, I think that I'm awesome, but I think that there's a lot of room for laughter and just like expression that way.
Listen, if you don't think that, then that's more of a problem than any fashion we could ever discuss. Like, nobody's perfect. Nothing is that serious. And unfortunately, I truly, truly from the bottom of my heart believe nobody's job besides a doctor doing, you know, child oncology or brain surgery is that important. And you have to laugh. You have to know that that's just the life. Like, there's always bigger things going on. And if you can't laugh about these things, then we can't get up every morning.
Yeah, I love that we're talking about this because I think that humor, there's so much beauty and there's so much healing in humor and there's so much opportunity for authenticity and expression in humor, and especially as it relates to fashion. And that doesn't mean that like you wear something just to be funny. To me, at least, it means wearing it with lightness, where you can just give yourself the room to say, okay, that didn't work out as well, moving on.
Lately, I've been thinking, not thinking, but I have a friend who has, you know, she has a big following and she wears socks with sandals a lot. And I used to think like, what? And now I'm kind of into it. And I'm like,
oh, I love it.
Does it only look good because of who they are and, you know, what they look like? Or do I kind of like it? Is it funny? Is it, you know, like you humor exists in all forms, even when it's something serious. And whether it's self-deprecating or not, it's still, you know, you have to laugh.
Okay. My final question. And by the way, I don't like write out all of these questions. You're just awesome to talk to. And I had so many like curious thoughts coming into this, but any like fashion, I hate the word hack, but like any expert tips that you're just like, if there was any wisdom I would impart on anybody in terms of like the thing I wish I would have known about clothes, or just like a tweak that you can make, or even if it's a shopping hack or something, like what are your top tips that you would leave our community with?
I think it's something that even I need to practice more. The most important thing is to get dressed. When I get dressed, I feel better. My day is better. Things go better. Everything is more positive. Get dressed. Whether it's, like I said, whether it's athleisure or sweats or a dress or a suit, get dressed. Match, you know, even if I'm going to work out, it needs to be something that if I ran into an ex-boyfriend, I'm not embarrassed of. You know, wear a matching set, wear the cute workout shoes, put a headband on. Look, everybody becomes their mother. you need to get dressed. Don't roll out of bed, even on your worst, laziest day, and not put on a piece of jewelry, or not just always put forth a little bit of effort in your clothing that, you know, if you see someone at the grocery store that you don't want to have to see, that you're going to feel like, well, at least I had some lipstick on. At least I put on my favorite sweater. If you go to work every day in an office, like every day you should put on something that you, you know, you don't have to have brand new clothes every day and look your best, but you need to get dressed. Just always put forth just a little effort in getting dressed, because I truly believe that when you're dressed in whatever aesthetic, what for whatever event, you feel a little better and things go better.
I 100% agree. I love that tip. That is such a beautiful way to end our conversation. And I'm just so grateful for you taking the time and just sharing your truth and your expertise and hanging out with us. This is awesome. Where can everybody find you and see these incredible sessions that you do and everything else?
And we're trying and always evolving. My Instagram is Sabrina Chazen, SabrinaChazen. It's just my name. That is my handle. And that is where you can find me, see the matches, shop the matches. There's a lot of other lifestyle stuff that's thrown in. I found my favorite Amazon pillows, your favorite face cream, you know, bookends for your house, anything that I love, and some funny memes. Actually, I don't really post memes, just funny things through the day. It's all there on Instagram. I have a website where I do post some of the clothes, but you know, I link them through Like to Know It. But most of all, I think Instagram is my number one channel where I communicate with everybody and post.
Cool. And we'll link it in the show notes so that it's easy to find. Thank you so much. You're awesome. I really appreciate it.
Loved being here. Thank you for having me.
That's our show. Thank you to our producer, Stephanie Olea, our show manager, Shayla Anderson, and our incredible guest. If you want to stay connected and learn more about our guest today, click the show notes of this episode. And if this conversation resonated with you, please share it with a friend or leave a review so that we can continue to destigmatize these important conversations around our relationship with food and body and spread inspiration to more women. One last thing, please don't forget to hit subscribe so that you can save time and stay on top of each new episode every week. I'm sending you so much love, confidence, and strength. Talk to you soon.